this is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Of course, you can hear us on satellite virtual channel W3957 at kickradio.com, at our new webpage, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up the live feed, download podcasts of past shows, listen to the daily commentary or whatever. And of course, now on Access Communications, Channel 7, here locally and wherever else you can find us. Tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show, Eric Spinotto. He's a favorite guest here on the program. He's a former cable news producer and president of Spinotto & Associates. Eric and I are going to talk about all these sports stars that are in trouble. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL, you name it, they've all got problems. And then a little later on from newsbusters.org, Mark Finkelstein will be here. We're going to talk about this, and I know you're going to be shocked, a bias at MSNBC towards liberal thinking. I know you're going to be shocked with that, but Mark Finkelstein will be here to talk about it. And then Robert Peters comes back to the show to talk about nudity in the New York Post. Yep, one of the major newspapers in North America has nudity in it. And Robert Peters is the president of Morality and Media. He's going to drop around. And then president of Silver Creek Entertainment, journalist, I call him the newsbreaker, he's my buddy, Larry Garrison, will be here to talk about John Mark Carr. Remember that character? One year later. That's tonight here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Tuesday, August 21st, 2007. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer, and here's my daily commentary. You know, some endorsements for political candidates can make or break a campaign, and according to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, this endorsement may do either. Former Hollywood madam and current rural Nevada small business woman Heidi Fleiss was turned away from Hillary Clinton's appearance in Pahrump, Nevada last week, but she doesn't hold a grudge. Fleiss, who is running a laundromat while she continues to dream of opening a brothel for women, is backing Senator Clinton for president. Fleiss says, "I'm a big fan of Hillary. Any woman who's smart. How can you not be?" said Fleiss, 41, "even if you're a Republican. If you're a woman and you're smart, you have to respect that woman." Fleiss describes herself as a tree hugger who is generally liberal but favors the death penalty. She said her business, called Dirty Laundry, is thriving. She just had to buy another supersized washing machine. And she also wants to develop some wind turbines on some land that she owns. The day after Clinton visited, she attended a forum on energy in Pahrump, hosted by Dirty, Dingy, Harry Reid of Nevada. So we got Hillary and Dingy Harry and Dirty Laundry. That sounds like a perfect mix to me. Political candidates mixing with Dirty Laundry? That's what we all like to see. I'm Dana Pretzer. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. If you've been following the news, you'll see that every major sports league has problems with their players. Legal problems with the NBA. There's the referee scandal, betting on games. NHL, Rip Tocchet has been sentenced for gambling and betting on games. Major League Baseball, of course, steroids and Barry Bonds. NFL, Michael Vick, you know, can you get much sicker than what he did with the dog fighting and the cruelty to animals? And apparently he's in the midst of pleading guilty to all those charges. I thought I'd bring on Eric Spinotto. Eric is a former cable news producer and, of course, president and CEO of Spinotto & Associates to talk about these stories and tie it into the whole role model thing about sports stars. You know, kids, they idolize these sports stars, but we seem to see more and more problems with them. And is the media covering these stories the way that they should be? Hi, Eric.
Hi, Dana.
Nice to have you back on the program. You know, I'm not sure in my lifetime, I'm getting pretty old now, you can blow the cobwebs off me, that I can ever remember a scandal in every major league sports franchise, or not franchise, but every league in sports around right now, and they all have them. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL, they've all got them, and they're serious things too. What are your thoughts from the, you know, the perspective as a cable news producer and seeing these stories the way they've been reported?
I mean, you know, it far happens often too much, you know, as you never want to hear, you know, because, again, they are athletes that you and I and many, many others across the country tend to watch on a weekly basis, you know, of their, you know, particular profession. And it's very hurtful to see what some of them that you look up to, because you respect them as an athlete, you know, they did, you know, what happens behind closed doors is a different story, obviously, than what they're doing on the field. So you can only be, you know, not so judgmental quickly on these guys until, you know, in the court of law they see what actually is true and not true. But in this case with Michael Vick, who's a great, great football player, you really don't can't have sympathy for him because of the nature of the crime that he's you know, allegedly has committed. Because he's taken, you know, he pled guilty.
Exactly, and it's tied him in pretty tightly to it. Will the NFL be wrong to bring him back eventually, or is Michael Vick's career done now?
You know, I think it's done. I think the nature of this particular crime is so horrific. I'm going to tell you right now, if he does come back, that team will have animal rights activists at training camp throughout every single game that's played. And it's going to, and I think it's going to be disturbance to his team members. And I just don't see how something this bad can go in his favor. It's a shame. But, you know, he took a, you know, he had a promising career, and something like this, which he never thought he would get caught, you know, is now, he ruined his, you know, his future.
Cable news, mainstream media, you name it, has covered these stories to the point where the credibility of these leagues has been brought into question, especially the NBA with the referee scandal. Of course, Major League Baseball with steroids has been going on for a while now. Let's talk a little bit, Eric, about the sort of coverage we've been seeing. You know, young kids, older people, they look at these sports stars and have them as role models. The merchandising, the jerseys, the commercials, you name it. What has the coverage of these stories done to that, or will there always be a Michael Vick jersey out there and fans of him no matter what happens?
No, there's always going to be a Michael story. There's always going to be a Michael Vick story. You know, and let's face it, it has nothing to do with the type of sport, type of race. I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, some athletes think they're above the law. They tend to walk around paid very, very well. But in the end, there's those that work their butts off to be where they are today, and they forget easily how hard it was to get there. And when you have tons of money rolling in, and the ego's there because of the fan support, I think they lose sight of reality. And, you know, now what happened to Michael Vick, you just, like, you know, same thing with, like, Barry Bonds, you know, allegations of steroids. You think that some guys would still, you know, would learn and not do allegedly wrong things, but guess what? They'll still do it until they're caught and you know, their reputation is totally tarnished, you know, by the reporting, by, you know, factual stuff, by the media. You know, there's no media that's out to get these people. They're the ones that create their own story.
Of course, you have the faction of people out there that say, steroids, so what? Let them get all juiced up and let's have a baseball league just for guys that are on steroids. It makes them compete better. And yet we hear those stories coming across the wire, and it makes one wonder as far as the credibility, first of all, of sports and of the reporting. Is that taken into question, or is this just something where, you know, if it bleeds, it leads? Talk about that as far as the perspective as a producer. You're going to do a segment on Barry Bonds. How do you handle that?
I mean, look, when it comes to allegations, it's very sensitive and it's very serious. Any journalist knows that you just can't go on the air based on, you know, third-hand source. I mean, if you're going to go on air and report something, it has to be accurate. It has to be more than one source. And, you know, you just, but you want to also report facts, because it can always be egg on your face and your own reputation, not just your reputation, but, of course, the company that you represent. That's the foremost important thing. And that's why we have editorial producers and seniors. You know, it's always a team, collaborate, you know, editors that make the final decision of what should go to print, what should go to air, et cetera, et cetera. But, look, these athletes, you know, if a story arises that is of interest to us, and especially in the Barry Bonds, he is chasing, he did chase and broke an historic record. It had, you know, the media has every single right to scrutinize all these allegations that came out a couple of years ago. It doesn't matter with Canseco, Jose Canseco, former baseball player who also had a promising career but ruined it, but is a little more forthcoming of his wrongdoings. You know, that's, the media has the right to report these stories, but it has to be accurately. Because in the end, if, you know, go back to Michael Vick, all along I was innocent. All along he said, I will prove I was innocent. Well, guess what? He pled guilty. So yeah, obviously he wasn't innocent. And to go back to the reputation, I believe if he came forward and admitted wrongdoing, I think maybe at that time he had a better chance in continuing his career.
Cable news outlets today, 24/7, although they re-air some of their primetime programming later on in the evening, it must be difficult to find stories that can fill a 24/7 you know, news service. Mainstream media, NBC, CBS, they have the half hour or hour program, but you guys are going 24 hours a day. These types of stories, are we seeing now more prevalent because of the 24/7 coverage?
No. I mean, every network has their own, you know, look, every network has different viewership. And the viewers will tend to go to one network over the other. But, you know, news is news. I mean, I think what makes a great news cable news outlet is providing news that's, you know, everyday people are reading, but also it's more like, did you know? Did you hear that? Look to break stories. And there's a lot of, you know, networks that will strive for that in producing stories that you don't see in every major front paper, newspaper reporter. So, believe it or not, you can, you know, Dana, you can make a story out of anything. I mean, a story, you can make any, you know, a dog rescue someone, you know, you can make a story out of that. But on the cable, it's, I think, you know, what is of interest to the nation, was, you know, is something important. It could be, you know, the World Trade Center fire that happened here in New York. You know, that was a historic moment, and two brave firemen lost their lives. It was like, you know, it was a flashback for, you know, 6 years ago to 9/11 for many people. So you can make a, and just because it was a New York fire, it still was, you know, World Trade Center, and two firemen lost their lives. Probably battle, of course, the fire on 9/11. So, you know, you can make a story on anything, and I just think it just comes down to a good editor, you know, and senior producer, and make those decisions. I think this is the most interesting and informative story for the viewers. To understand, you know, to learn, be informed, and entertained at the same time.
The tragedy in New York here just recently has been broadcast on cable news and major news outlets, and it's sad. It just breaks your heart, especially the fact that it's an empty building, and a lot of people are wondering, why did they even go in there? My question to you is, though, on that story, they broadcast some of the radio transmission, very graphic, and I don't mean language-wise, but it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up to see how these brave firemen are out there, and they're concerned about their own and the stress that they go through. How do you make a decision whether or not you're going to run something like that? I go back to the late Hal Fishman on KTLA making the decision whether or not to run the Rodney King video. It's got to be tough.
It is very sensitive, at the same time very important, because people do want to hear it. They want to hear from themselves of that last communication. The question is, you don't want to overuse it. You have to always have to be considerate of the families, of the ones that lost loved ones. But at the same time, there is a learning value there. And also, you don't need to, you know, repeat it. I mean, I think sometimes there are certain sentences or words, I think people can fill in the blanks. But just to show the natural sound, you know, I'm trying to say, hello, I'm so-and-so, you know, please help me.
Yeah.
That's enough sometimes. I think people can visualize what that individual is going through. But, you know, you know, just like the plane, the famous shot of the planes going to World Trade Center. In the beginning, it was the story. It was the story. You cannot ignore it. But then what happens is, producers and editors, again, you don't need to show it because we've seen it so much. The vision is there forever. And therefore, you don't need to replay certain videos of historic moments. In the case like Rodney King being beaten, I think we've seen it enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless it becomes a story again. If the guy who allegedly, you know, who did beat him, you know, maybe made news again, they would find a reason to do it. But sometimes these videos is overused, and that's why it's sensitive, foremost to the families.
On the 23rd of August, you're going to be your presenter to the PR University, Bulldog Reporters PR University Audio Conference. I'm just reading the presser here on the Internet. It looks fascinating. Tell us about that.
This was great. I was invited to be a part of a panel for a couple of journalists who will be along with me. And there's some people here in the United States, our public relations people, that are just looking to seek ways to better serve their clients and how to get them national exposure. And because of my experience working not just in cable news, but being, you know, doing this for 20 years as a producer slash booker, you know, I know how we think, want, and demand producers and bookers, and hopefully, you know, Thursday I'll be able to provide some key tips on how to, you know, to present your client to that media outlet you're trying to pitch them, and also make the point of that they're the best person for this topic or subject to talk about.
That's got to be a tough decision, too, as far as the best person or the best subject. I'm in contact with people all the time, even with my program, saying that we've tried to get on the air somewhere, but we can't. Here's our story. And, you know, you try to investigate it the best you can, and you make a decision whether or not you're going to air it. How difficult is that for you, and how many times a day do you pick up the telephone and try to make that decision?
Many times. I mean, I'll tell you, I love doing what I do because sometimes it's what I can do for people. I mean, excuse me, it's what people could do for me. Look, they're allowing me to tell their story. I think the toughest thing is not every story is airable because stories, producers, editors, you need layers to the story. Not every story has to have an ending, but it has to have an interest. There has to be some hook. That's maybe just different. Every day you try to find a different hook. But it's great because you meet so many people. You feel good when you deliver some good stories and make a difference on certain different levels. But when it comes to, you know, people that want to be analysts and stuff like that, there are a lot of smart people out there that just don't know how to get their names across the desk of these producers and bookers that make these final says or are seeking analysts to put on their programs. And that's just something that, because of my experience, I've had the privilege, to do then and to do now, you know, having clients myself, been able to put them on recently and to see, you know, to mold them into a good guest. And, you know, a good guest is, look, everyone has a certain area that that's their strength. It's just, TV is a big beast. It comes down to your presentation, your energy, your appearance, and just saying the most important thing of why you're there. And that's what just makes a good guest, and that's what a lot of producers on radio programs, local shows, it just, we want people that just have energy and just, you know, speak conversational.
Is there too many channels and not enough viewers? You know, today with the cable markets and satellite and digital and all this sort of stuff, you know, the only thing that there isn't on there right now is the Pots and Pans channel. Well, maybe there is. I don't know. Is there too much out there, or do the people look for the content that they want to watch or listen?
People look for the content that they want to watch and listen. And let me tell you something. Cable is a very, very, very hard industry to work in. People really don't understand what goes on behind the scenes of all the producers and the bookers and the managers. I mean, like you said, you are filling 24/7, but it's good journalism. I mean, honestly, everyone wants to do well. They want to report good stories or break stories, and it's tough. But I'll tell you, it's fun too. It's very rewarding. It's you know, because again, you get to be open to stories throughout the country. You know, if you work at a local news market, you know, the local news market cares about the local news market. They don't necessarily want to deal with national stories, broaden it as much as cable. And I like, you know, I had the privilege of working for cable news because you get to, you know, work on international and local stories and get to meet people. And also, you know, you can become well-educated, you know, different laws, you know, different personalities. You know, you get to learn all of the different things that falls into, a journalist that needs to know to do a good job on air.
Absolutely. Eric Spinotto, President and CEO of Spinotto & Associates. It's always good to have you with us. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Dana.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be back in just a minute with Mark Finkelstein from Newsbusters, and we're going to talk about a liberal bias at MSNBC. I know that's shocking, but that's what we're going to talk about here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. I found an interesting article here the other day. In fact, it made me smile and it made me shake my head a little bit, but it was very well written, newsbusters.org. And it talks about MSNBC, a topic that I've covered many times in my program. Usually we're talking about our old friend Keith Olbermann. But this is a story that has to do with Joe Scarborough. And him coming forward and talking about, I think it was the 2004 State of the Union address by President Bush, and Joe Scarborough walking into the newsroom at MSNBC and seeing the newsroom booing and carrying on. And Joe Scarborough actually admitting the fact that there is a liberal bias at MSNBC. I thought I'd bring on the author of that article from newsbusters.org, Mark Finkelstein. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Dana, great to be with you. I am, by the way, your voice is coming across very, very faintly on the phone line.
Is it? Okay. I'll try and speak up a little bit here.
Okay.
You hearing me okay now?
Yes, just fine now.
It sounds like we're doing a Verizon commercial or something. But did you notice that the "Can you hear me now" guy, he doesn't talk much anymore? That's maybe maybe that's not a good thing for MSNBC or for Verizon. I got MSNBC on the brain. Let's talk about the article. Of course, we've covered, as you heard in my introduction, the issue of MSNBC for quite some time now with different media specialists and the difference, the very obvious difference between MSNBC and so Fox News, CNN, whatever. Let's talk about how you came across this information and what made you write the article.
Right. Well, I've gotten into the habit. I'm an early bird, and I've gotten into the habit as part of my work at Newsbusters, which focuses on exposing liberal media bias, of watching the Morning Joe show. Joe Scarborough used to have an evening show on MSNBC. Now he has the slot starting at 6 a.m. Eastern time that was Don Imus's old slot. And I must say that he gets lots of good guests, and I find it to be a lively, entertaining, mix of news and politics. So I tune in most every morning. And a week or so ago, they had a segment that was focusing, in fact, on a story out of Seattle about the fact that at a meeting of the Seattle Times newspaper staff to go over the news of the day, cheering broke out in the newsroom when news of Karl Rove's resignation came across the wire.
Right.
And the editor there sent out a memo reprimanding people and telling them to keep their views to themselves, etc. And so in discussing that on MSNBC, Joe said, well, we had a sort of similar incident here at MSNBC, and actually it was in 2003, which was Joe Scarborough's very first day at MSNBC. It was the State of the Union, and he was in the newsroom at MSNBC when people, as he described it, virtually throughout the entire State of the Union speech booed President Bush. And Joe went on to say that he brought this to the attention of an MSNBC executive by the name of Phil Griffin, and that just as the Seattle Times editor had done, Griffin reprimanded the MSNBC news staff not to do this sort of thing.
One of the things that when I read your article, and I did a daily commentary on this a few days back, and assuming Scarborough is telling the truth, and I think he is, and he could be, in my opinion, he's the only decent show on MSNBC, but that's just my opinion, and I like watching the early show, and I like the later show, too, was that what's he thinking? You know, MSNBC drips of liberal bias. All you have to do is turn on Keith Olbermann or any of the other shows. You see soon enough that the MSNBC staffers that were there have since gone somewhere else. Rita Cosby, although she didn't do much politics, is, I don't even know if she's with MSNBC anymore. You never see her. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. They're playing that card right now that anti-Bush. And they're hoping that that will carry them. Yes, their ratings have gone up. But what's going to happen when that starts to become old and stale?
Well, I think you're largely right. They have decided to carve out a niche for themselves as being, you know, the kind of liberal political network, and you know, you mentioned Keith Olbermann, obviously. Chris Matthews also has a show. Chris Matthews, the former aide to both Jimmy Carter and Tip O'Neill, the former very partisan Speaker of the House, Democratic Speaker of the House of Representatives. So, I mean, clearly they generally have that orientation, although, you know, by the same token, there are people like Scarborough himself, who is a former Republican congressman, and Pat Buchanan does not have his own show, but regularly turns up as a commentator. So, you know, there is some diversity of opinion there, but I don't think there's any denying that, you know, as brought out by Scarborough's, you know, own recounting of this incident, that, you know, overwhelmingly they tend left.
You know, with this whole issue coming forward now, I'm curious, have you heard anything back from Scarborough or his people?
Well, actually, I have not personally heard from Scarborough, but he went back to the subject. You know, he did speak about the fact, you know, again, I was watching this the morning that he made the comment, and literally within a half an hour I had an item up on it with video of his comments up at newsbusters.org. And within 20 minutes of my having posted that item, he was commenting on it on the air, and I don't know if you want to say praise, but refer to our quote-unquote ruthless efficiency in getting it up there. So I think it kind of shows the great interaction that now exists between the traditional media and the new media, that, you know, we go back and forth with each other, and, you know, he's very aware that we're monitoring him, and I suppose a little bit of vice versa. So the next day he actually came back, and it seemed pretty clear from his comments that I don't want to say he was taken to the woodshed by the folks at MSNBC, but he was sort of, you might say, revising and extending his remarks. The next day he said that, well, the people that were booing were people from MSNBC shows that had been canceled, and that those people have been, quote-unquote, largely cycled out. So,
oh, I see.
You know, he was trying to suggest that this was just a very, very limited phenomenon, and those people aren't there anymore. But by the same token, as Joe mentioned, this was his very first night at work at MSNBC when this event happened. So the notion that Joe was able to determine that all the people that were booing just happened to be those from canceled shows and that they weren't there anymore, I think, you know, strains credulity a little bit.
I would say, how many people from canceled shows are in the newsroom watching the President's State of the Union address? Joe was just trying to cover his butt, and, well, I guess that's okay, too.
I do give him credit for having mentioned this in the first place.
Sure.
I'm quite sure that he did take some heat for having done so and aired some of their dirty laundry, but I think he clearly, by the next day, was, if not exactly backtracking, at least, you know, covering his bases a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough, that's for sure. We're talking to Mark Finkelstein from newsbusters.org. Let's talk a little bit about your blog, your organization, Combating...
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, Newsbusters is part of Brent Bozell's Media Research Center, which has been in the business now for about a quarter of a century in a very systematic way, combating liberal media bias and documenting it and really having amazing archives. If any of your listeners, you know, ever want to document some instance of liberal media bias going back over the last 20 or 25 years, just go to Media Research Center and they can search for it, and it's amazing, you know, what's in there. So they have done a very systematic job of documenting this. And a couple of years ago, Media Research Center decided that they needed to have a blog that would have a more immediate sort of impact and relationship to the news. And a couple of the guys, the Sheffield brothers, Matt and Greg, who had been doing the rather biased CBS.com blog. When Dan, you know, left CBS, they were looking for some new frontiers, and they came on over and started Newsbusters. And I had been just posting my own stuff for my own amusement at another conservatively oriented site that I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with, Free Republic. And I guess the Sheffields have been reading my stuff and invited me to become a contributing editor over at Newsbusters. So, I started doing that a couple of years ago when the blog started, and I began personally with a focus on the Today Show because that's what I have been doing at Free Republic. But I've since expanded, and everything is sort of fair game. I had something this morning about a New York Times article, and frequently write about MSNBC. But for viewers that are interested in this issue, or listeners that are interested in the issue of media bias, if they want some very topical, immediate response to whatever is in the news that day, if they go to Newsbusters, they'll find, I have, lots of great colleagues over there, and we really cover pretty much the entire, at least American-oriented, with some Canadian aspects, of media bias.
A lot of the rhetoric that we've heard coming out of the Democrats in the upcoming 2008 election are the attacks on the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, etc. What are your thoughts as far as media bias or media gagging that may come out of this next election?
Right. I mean, and you mentioned gagging, which is incredibly becoming an issue again, that the same Democrats and liberals that claim to quote-unquote celebrate diversity and want to hear 1,000, flowers bloom or voices bloom are the same folks that are now dredging up this antiquated notion of the quote-unquote fairness doctrine, which is, a way to muzzle voices that they don't want to hear. And, this is aimed specifically at talk radio, of all things. It's the one area in the media that is in fact dominated by conservatives, and that's just what the market happens to dictate. People who listen to radio tend to be in a demographic that leans conservative, and therefore there is a preponderance of conservative radio talkers. Liberals have tried and failed, as we know in the case of Air America and others. So the Democrats in Congress have singled out talk radio as the one place that they want to demand balance. Obviously, if it were, if they wanted to be across the board, then they'd have to demand balance in newspapers. And, we were talking earlier about the example of the Seattle Times, but we see it with virtually every major newspaper in the United States, from the New York Times to the Boston Globe, the LA Times, you name it, almost all of them lean left. If we wanted to look at the broadcast networks in the United States, CBS, NBC, ABC, again, all lean left. So, this is the most undemocratic and anti-free speech notions that has come down the pike in a long time. And, frankly, I think there's very little chance that the Democrats are going to be able to get this through. And, in a way, I'd like to see them talk more about it, because I think it puts them in the worst possible light.
Absolutely. They keep shooting themselves in the foot every time they open their mouths, and let them keep talking, that's for sure. Mark, I want to thank you for dropping around the program, and you guys over there, keep up the good work.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you, Dana. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, sir. All right. That's Mark Finkelstein from newsbusters.org. We have a couple of minutes before our next guest is available, so I thought I'd open up the phone line at 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. You can call in and talk about anything you like. Still later on the program, from Silver Creek Entertainment, president of Silver Creek Entertainment, and we call him the newsbreaker, Larry Garrison, will be here to talk about John Mark Carr a year later. You see that guy popping up on the news shows again, and if there's anyone that makes your skin crawl, it's John Mark Carr. So Larry Garrison will be here to talk about Mr. Carr, and then Bob Peters from Morality and Media will be here to talk about one of the biggest newspapers in North America, the New York Post, having ads of topless women. And he has a problem with that, and so do I. That's here tonight on Scared Monkeys Radio. But again, we'll open up the phone line right now at 306-842-7884. You can call and talk about anything you like. I keep getting asked about the web page, and again, I'll remind you, we've simplified it to, say, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's all you've got to put in, and it'll take you right to the radio page. There you can download commentaries, listen to the show live. It's set up now that Media Player will pick up the program, podcasts, you name it, you'll be able to pick it up there. So again, it's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And again, if you want to call in, it's 306-842-7884. That's 306-842-7884. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back here with your calls on the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Hi, caller. How are you?
Hey, Dan, it's Red. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. How are things in your neck of the woods this evening?
Oh, okay. I thought I'd call you in the middle, you know, you know, maybe past my bedtime by the time your show's over tonight.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Old guys like us, we have to get our rest, don't we?
What little we'd get, yes.
What's up tonight, sir?
Oh, MSNBC liberal.
Yeah.
Go figure.
I know. I was shocked when I read that article, but I thought, I'm going to bring Mark on, and we're going to talk about this a little bit, because he was sharp enough to pick Scarborough, who, again, in my opinion, is the only decent program on there, saying this, and good for Joe Scarborough for saying it.
Yeah, I mean, Scarborough and the people at Scarborough's show, I mean, for those who have followed, he had made a point about, you know, the media catching on to the blogs and, you know, the blogs kind of following the media, obviously. You know, that's what they've been doing for quite some time, being
right,
rather critical of the media. But to give Scarborough and his producers their kudos, I mean, they were on the ground floor when we were covering Natalie Holloway in Aruba.
Right.
They were one of the very few mainstream media outlets that would call us up at any given time, discuss things with us, go back and forth, and weren't ashamed to say that they were getting their information from Scared Monkeys. And so I give the Scarborough people a lot of credit, and God only knows how they've managed to stay on MSNBC as long as they have, but you know, every media outlet, I guess that's their token conservative.
I never thought of that, but he's in a time right now. He's in a time slot that Don Imus had, and I don't think you can find two more different people than Don Imus and Joe Scarborough. How do you think he's going to make out in the early morning?
You know, Dana, it's very sad to say, but I had no idea he was still on MSNBC.
Oh.
That's a little early for Red, as Red's usually up into the wee hours of the evening, and 6 o'clock doesn't happen very often.
No.
But the fact that he maintains the show, I guess, is a good thing, to at least have his view. I mean, he does not come across as a staunch conservative. He's rather middle of the road, although I believe if he was on Fox, he would portray himself as somebody a little different. He tries to be quote-unquote independent when he's on MSNBC. But, you know, that being said, it's rather unfortunate that his night slot got taken by, I think, Abrams.
Isn't Abrams is just filling in, I think. Oh, I don't know.
I mean, it's MSNBC is different, to say the least. It's not, I kind of refer to it as, it's not Fox and it's not CNN.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. You know, and that's really ultimately what their problem has been for quite a while. And now they've taken off the programming and they've put on, I guess, prison shows night after night after night.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, you know, I guess that's cheap ratings, but, you know, whatever they want to do. But, you know, and that being said, your first interview tonight, when you were talking about the sports athletes with Eric Spinato,
right?
One thing does have to be said here, and the media needs to look in the mirror, because they allowed this to happen. The Michael Vick thing's a little different in the sense that who on earth could see that coming?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that takes a special, real lowlife to do something like that. I mean, that just is not normal to, who has actually known anybody or does anything where they would bet on dogfighting, let alone murder animals. I mean, that's just an all new low.
Yep.
But when it comes to the media in baseball and the steroid issue, they're just as complicit
mm-hmm.
as the owners, as the commissioner,
yep.
as the baseball players. They all just stood by and watched it happen, reaped the rewards of the ratings of McGuire and Sosa going at it with a home run title. Nobody goes from 17 home runs in a year to 52, which some of these guys were doing. And it was just so blatantly obvious. And no one asked the question back then. How does somebody's forearms get this big?
Exactly.
How does somebody's feet size get bigger and their head as well?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it just is something where the media really, really dropped the ball back when this happened. And they really should have been more aggressive in questioning what was going on in baseball rather than just seeing home runs leave the yard left and right. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, you look at a guy like Henry Aaron, who just went through misery getting his record.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the man had death threats. The man had, I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible situation for him. And he overcame it. And he was a great, beyond home run king, he was a great ambassador to baseball. And to have his record kind of stolen in this manner, I mean, you got to feel for the man.
Absolutely. It's the professional sports leagues, their credibility is going right down the crapper. Just before I let you go, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the YouTube or listen to today's daily commentary where Heidi Fleiss has endorsed Hillary Clinton in her run for president. And Heidi has her new business in Nevada called Dirty Laundry. And I thought there was quite a cliche there with politicians and Heidi Fleiss's Dirty Laundry. Your thoughts?
Boy, there's a match made in somewhere, huh? Wow. Heidi Fleiss giving an endorsement.
Yeah.
There's the kiss of death. I mean, it's you got to give her credit for the dirty. I mean, the title rather catchy,
yep.
or with Dirty Laundry, but the fact that that would even have any kind of connotation towards the Clintons, that's even more comical with that beloved past. I guess they're going to try to come up, maybe they can do a Dirty Laundry and maybe put in white water or whitewash.
Yeah, there you go.
The mix. I mean, it's going to be interesting, let's just say. And we talk about the media so much, Dana, and I wonder how much of this oversaturation of politics they've put forth. Down here, people are already tired of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've started this thing out so fast, so soon, and by the time the primaries run around, I mean, people are just waving a white flag saying no mas. I mean, how much of it is to really make people not interested so maybe that they don't go out and vote? And it's just, because they're just beating a dead horse with a lot of the political talk. And, and I'm a political junkie.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm tired of it.
Yeah, for sure. Before I let you go, a lot of upgrades at Scared Monkeys. It's looking good. Tell the folks about that.
Well, we thought we were going to get most of them done. We still actually have many coming down the road, which you and I have, and Dougie have talked about. And we look forward to, putting a lot of new things into your show coming up. So people are going to actually be hearing a little bit of a new and improved show with Dana. The interviews are going to be as stellar as normal as always, and we're just going to get a little bit of the production side up, and we have some things down the pike as well. Actually, some big news is coming down the pike with Scared Monkeys. We're not at liberty to say right now. We have to cross some T's and dot some I's, but there's going to be some really interesting news coming down in the hopefully the very near future. I think a lot of people will be really excited about it. I know we certainly.
Well, it sounds great, as usual. It's always a pleasure to have you on the air, my friend.
Thank you, Dana. You have a great evening.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Red from Scared Monkeys. We'll be right back with Bob Peters from Morality and Media. Okay, welcome back. In tonight's Policing the Press segment, we're going to bring on Robert Peters as the president of Morality in Media. We're going to talk about the New York Post and what they've done recently, and they've decided to, the New York Post, that is, depict some topless women. What's the world coming to when you can't pick up the New York Post without seeing some topless women? That's a big problem, and Robert Peters is here to talk to us about that. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
The Playboy is one thing. The New York Post is another thing. Let's talk about this problem.
Well, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. There was a half-page photograph of Courtney Love. I don't know if all your listeners know who Courtney Love is, but she was the wife of a well-known rock star who committed suicide tragically.
Right.
And very attractive woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she was sitting at half page of the top half page of the New York Post. She's sitting there totally naked with her leg, you know, knee covering the bottom private part, but she was totally topless except for a couple of beads. And that, I'll tell you, I've been reading the Post going on, good Lord, I started reading the Post probably back in 1977, and I don't recall ever seeing anything quite so blatant. But the next day, I mean, the very next day, there was a half page Jordache jeans ad with a woman who was topless staring at herself in a mirror, and you could see the reflection of the mirror that she was topless. And I just thought, maybe I came to the wrong conclusion, but my conclusion was this was not an accident. Somebody at the Post is thinking that we want to push the, you know, the sexually provocative stuff just a little bit further with the goal of, you know, having the Post be a combination of a newspaper and a Playboy-type publication. So, long story short, I put together a release and took the Post to task on it. Now, whether it's going to do any good, I don't know. But I'll tell you, I came awfully close to making a decision I wasn't going to buy the Post anymore. And I basically, you know, for the most part, I greatly appreciate the New York Post because it has viewpoints that no other paper in this city has. And interestingly, you know, at one level, unfortunately, they don't get as much advertising, paid advertising. So on the whole, you have more news in the Post than you do in the Daily News, which is its chief competitor. But I'll tell you, if they start going the way I've heard Rupert Murdoch went when he was in Australia and when he purchased the paper in London, they had topless gals in both of the papers. If that's what the Post is going to do, I'm going to stop buying it and at least put my 2 cents into people I know that maybe they ought to consider doing the same.
Well, there's an aspect that we need to discuss a little bit here, Bob, is the difference between obviously the New York Post and Playboy magazine is that parents won't let their 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 or 12-year-old, whatever, sit down and look at, at least I hope they won't, Playboy magazine. This is a newspaper which a child could pick up to look at very easily. There's that concern that we need to look at.
Well, I agree. You know, I mean, it's probably true in New York City. Most people purchase the Post at the newsstand and discard it somewhere along the line. But you can have the Post sent to your home. And I don't think there's any doubt that many people who pick up the paper, whether it's the Post or any other paper, they don't throw it away. They bring it home with them. They put it down. Maybe they haven't read it yet. And they don't know that there's a half-page topless gal, and you know, right in the middle of the paper, and of course the kids pick it up. But you know, it angers me for a couple of reasons. But one reason it angers me is because I'm kind of old-fashioned in the sense that I believe that if you're going to have a democracy, you need to have an informed people. And, you know, to me, part of a very important part of keeping people informed is the local paper, whether it's in the old version or the internet version. But newspapers are, I tell you, there's nobody that has the reporting staff that local newspapers have. I mean, television gave that up a long time ago. You know, the local TV news reporters today, you know, they listen to the police radio, and if there's a cat up the tree, they send a camera crew.
Right.
If a cat went down the sewer, they send a camera crew. You know, if there's a fire, they send a camera crew. And there's a bad crime, and even if it's not so bad, they send a camera crew. And meanwhile, all the important governmental news that's happening locally in New York City and cities all across the country is virtually ignored by the local television news because it's perceived not to be, it's not going to keep the ratings up. So in my opinion, local newspapers still play a very, very important role in keeping the public informed. And I whether it's the New York Post or newspapers generally, I just hope somehow that the publishers of these papers understand the public service role they play and don't decide to go the way of Maxim magazine or worse yet, Playboy magazine.
This issue of morality, whether it's in a newspaper, cable news coverage, local news coverage, like you say, is that a sign of the times, or is this a sign of these businesses trying to follow the money trail? If we put a nude model in the newspaper, maybe we'll sell 3,000 or 4,000 more and make some money that we're losing. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've got to conclude that whoever made the decision to run the half-page photograph of Courtney Love and the half-page Jordache ad concluded that it was financially the right decision to make. At one level, I hope they're wrong, but I don't doubt that there is a significant market for that sort of thing. But another concern I have, which is just kind of doesn't no secret, that if something succeeds for one competitor in a media.
Exactly.
Ultimately, everybody else is going to follow. Not too many decades ago, I guess it was 2 or 3, you know, the Fox TV network came into being. And it really kind of led the, you know, the things were already beginning to get bad, but Fox really, you know, they decided to go the low road, and they had some success, and pretty soon everybody else was going the low road because they figured that's the only way we can compete. And I tell you, if the New York Post starts going the low road and they start their paper, their circulation increases, it's only a matter of time before the Daily News and the Newsday start doing the same thing and other papers will hear about it. Pretty soon, virtually every paper in the country, or certainly many of them, will be running half-page topless things, you know, with the idea that that's what the readers want. God help us, if you'll pardon my expression.
You know, the term moral compass has been thrown around a lot lately. When we look at that term moral compass and we look at media today and then the role you're in as president of Morality and Media, where do we draw the line? Is this a government responsibility? Is this a responsibility of the viewer, listener, reader? Or how do we keep that? Because it is important.
Okay, historically, I don't think there's any question, you know, like it or not, I don't mean you personally, like it or not, something could have been done governmentally about the half-page topless photographs in the Post. How many decades ago, I don't know. But clearly at this moment in our nation's history, under current Supreme Court rulings, the Post certainly didn't violate any law. So the pressure that I would like to try to bring on the Post in a positive way, because I essentially like the Post, I'm not an enemy, I'm a friend. Yeah, it would be to hopefully convince them that it's not in their best interest, business-wise, to go to become a Maxim magazine or a Playboy magazine with daily news. That in the long run, that's not going to be good for the Post. But under current legal standards, they'd have to get pretty. You know, the only law that would possibly apply would be something called harmful to minors, and essentially for that law to apply, the paper would pretty much have to be in significant measure pornographic in some sense of that word. And, you know, that's not going to happen, I don't think, in my lifetime, hopefully. So what we're talking about with the Post at this moment in our nation's history is private pressure, not government intervention.
just before I let you go, Bob, the 2008 elections are coming up. There are some concerns you and I have talked about in past programs about regulation, television-wise, radio-wise, and just plain otherwise. Have the candidates addressed this? Where do you see the types of regulations and standards going with the election coming up, or is this a wait-and-see sort of thing?
Well, for us at Morality and Media, there are two primary concerns. One is our nation's federal obscenity laws. Those are laws that are aimed at hardcore pornography. And George Bush has certainly done a better job than Bill Clinton did. But that ain't saying much. And to say the least, so far, the Bush record is in significant measure a disappointment when it comes to enforcement of obscenity laws. Although I hasten to add, thankfully, at least they are doing cases, which Janet Reno was not doing. But unfortunately, at the White House level, the Democrats have been, in one sense, the best friends that the pornographers have ever had. I hope if a Democrat is elected in 2008 that will change. Mm-hmm. That, you know, whether the person is a Republican, Democrat, they will understand that there is a need for some legal limitations when it comes to pornography and all of this sex, vulgarity, violence, and mainstream entertainment that's so accessible to kids. But I think, you know, the word obscenity has come up in I understand that Mitt Romney has said that he would support obscenity laws, and I think, but to my knowledge, I haven't heard any discussion of what Hillary Clinton or Rudy Giuliani think about the sex and vulgarity problem on broadcasting and basic cable channels. I don't think it's become an issue yet. Whether it will depend on a lot of things. I guess you'd say Morality and Media and other people will be working to make it an issue, with the hopes that regardless of whether it's a Democrat or Republican that's in the White House, beginning in January 2009, they're going to do the right thing in this whole area of pornography and sexual content, violent content, and mainstream media. Now, I don't see the law as the whole answer to these problems, but I think people who think there is no role for law in restricting pornography and protecting kids from things that can mess up their beautiful little minds, they're talking about a constitution that is being shoved down our throats by the ACLU and their friends on the courts. It's not the First Amendment that our founding fathers gave us. Yep. 200 and some years ago. And it's not the First Amendment that the Supreme Court itself has understood for the great number of years of our nation's history. It's something quite recent where the judges have begun to reinterpret the First Amendment to protect things that it was never intended to protect, and in my opinion, it shouldn't protect.
Absolutely. Well said. Robert Peters, President of Morality and Media, thank you, and we'll have you back on again real soon.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. It's been a while since I've had my next guest on, Larry Garrison, president of Silver Creek Entertainment. We call him the Newsbreaker. A year ago, almost, or just a little past, that John Mark Carr came forward and was arrested for the murder of JonBenet Ramsey in Colorado 10 years before that, and it became a news event, so to speak. I spoke to John Mark Carr on the telephone one time, and it's not often that I walk away creeped out from talking to somebody, but this guy was unbelievable. I thought I'd bring on Larry Garrison to talk about John Mark Carr and other things, as Larry did work with the family. Larry Garrison, the Newsbreaker, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Larry, I'm hearing some things before we get into talking about John Mark Carr. I'm hearing some things, some rumors about the Newsbreaker becoming a TV series. That's big news. If true, what can you tell us?
Well, the rumors are true.
Wow.
I partnered with the infamous Jay Firestone of the new company Prodigy out of Canada. He has headed a studio. He's got credits that are impeccable. And we have partnered to do a series based on my life as a rebel journalist, When I sign my books, I usually sign it, "The truth is better than the spin." And the series will be showing the situations that I've gone through my 26-year career as a journalist, battling with people who wanted to more or less spin the stories for network, and what I actually went through. I'm very, very excited about it. We have a major agency in Los Angeles packaging the series right now, and I'm hoping that it might possibly be on for the fall.
Fantastic.
It'll be like a CSI Law and Order type show.
Fantastic. That's great. Great. Congratulations with that. And
thank you.
Those that haven't read the book, The Newsbreaker, make sure you get on Amazon or wherever, pick it up. It's a great book, a great read, and it'll be a great TV series for sure. It's been a year, actually a few days over a year, since the whole John Mark Carr story broke. Larry, your thoughts on 1 year later?
Well, it seems like the never-ending story.
Yeah.
I have to be very careful because, in a sense, I have a loyalty to the family. Nate Carr, John Mark Carr's brother, is a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just really a good person. And the family has been, the dad also, has been affected by this whole story, as everybody knows. I was lucky enough to be the only journalist to get in to meet with John while he was in jail, and I sat through the trial with other journalists, and he's got an insatiable appetite to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And to be something special, and I believe there are things that have not been answered yet, that there may be other implications here that may come out in the future.
Well, it seems like that when the investigation turned from him because of the DNA not matching, that it's kind of fallen off the radar, that there should have been more investigation to be done. And one of the things, Larry, that concerns me most is an interview that John Mark Carr did with a cable news outlet, where he was asked the question, if you were the DA or the judge, would you have let yourself go, released from jail? And he said no. And I tell you, that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. There's a lot more to this story. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, this whole situation, I'm also close with the young girl, Brooke, that he is seeing right now. And the whole situation is sad. Red flags go up for me as a journalist when his hard drive disappeared. How often does the FBI and law enforcement lose hard drives? I was wondering if they were using John Mark Carr to possibly get to somebody else.
Right.
I have not ruled out in my mind as a journalist that he might have been there, although some of his claims are outrageous. Maybe he might not have been there, but maybe he might have had some sort of affiliation. And the only reason why I say that is I sat in the trial and I watched law enforcement double-talking about things that should not have been lost.
Right.
And it was just astounding to me. And he has said certain things to me that leads me to believe that either he has convinced himself totally and may have some psychological problems, or he was really there or had some knowledge of something that was there.
There are parallels between this case and the investigation into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. Yes, the cases are different, but in both cases, it seems like police work 101 wasn't followed. There was some bumbling, like you mentioned, the hard drive disappearing. How important or how influential was the lack of investigation into this case turning the way that it did, especially in the media?
Well, I can't judge law enforcement. I don't know how the heck they lost what they lost and why. I really can't. I can only, say that I'm astounded by it. You're dealing with two different entities. With Natalie Holloway, I think that was a total cover-up.
Right.
I think Aruba, to this day, I say boycott Aruba. It's shameful what came down and where it's at, and I do believe the truth will come out in the end with Natalie. With John Mark Carr, we're here in our own country, and there are things that happen that normally don't happen. As you know, my sister has worked with the FBI,
right,
with her book Exposed that she wrote. And Stephanie said to me, the FBI doesn't make mistakes that often. And I've seen her with her work with them, and her success ratio is like 100%.
Yep.
And to me, there's more than meets the eye here.
Yeah.
Also, I've seen with John Mark Carr where he'd warrant things to me, and there have been inequities with things that he has said to me. I am not an advocate of John Mark Carr. I don't like the fact that this whole thing has been blown out of proportion. One, he complains about not being able to live his life and being harassed in parks. And the next minute, I was coming home from a trip from Florida. I'm in the airport, and there he is on the cover of the Post. And I think John is very naive. He doesn't understand that the press is using him to spin things. I've tried to protect him as much as I can so that the spin would not go out there. The only reason why I went into this was that John Mark Carr's brother, Nate, and his other brother, who's a teacher, it was inferred through the press that they introduced him to the Ramsey family at a party, which was outrageous.
Right.
I can tell you that John Mark Carr and the family has not made one dime off of this, though the infamous Nancy Grace on her show said I was doing a movie and a book on this. The only way I would ever do a movie and a book is if John Mark Carr was ever implicated in this murder, and there was more to the story and closure there, then maybe there would be something. Right now, there is nothing, and time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's another high-profile case that the public is fascinated with, that a Class A journalist like yourself, especially with your book and soon-to-be TV series and Newsbreaker, will follow, and the truth will come out eventually, I'm sure. Larry Garrison, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. If you could just stay on the line, I'll be right with you.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. And that's it for tonight's show. I want to thank my guests, Eric Spinato from Newsbusters, Mark Finkelstein from Morality and Media, Robert Peters, and, of course, the Newsbreaker, Larry Garrison. I remind you, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. The podcast for this program will be available a little bit later on this evening. Thank you for listening. Make sure and check out the webpage for my daily commentary and all my past shows. Good night.